From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made about a month ago, Friday, September 17th, when Governor Kathy Hochul signed a new law called the Less is More Act. It is one of the most ambitious pieces of parole reform in the country. Under the law, a person on parole can no longer be reincarcerated for what is known as a technical violation. Maybe they missed a meeting, missed curfew, a positive drug test. Not a reoffense of their original crime. Supporters of the new law say that if we are going to see people on parole successfully rebuild their lives, we can't keep throwing them in jail for small offenses or technical violations. Supporters wrote, quote, "Reincarceration not only harms individual lives and families without commensurate public safety gains, but also drives up the population in the state prisons and local jails, wasting taxpayer money," end quote. But a number of law enforcement leaders, including locally Monroe County Sheriff Todd Baxter and a number of police chiefs, have been warning that this legislation will make communities less safe. Police Chief Jim Van Brederode from the Gates Police Department has told reporters that, unfortunately, he says these are the people that make us concerned at night. They have committed violent offenses in the past, and this law puts more of them out back into the community. The sheriff's office published a post on social media with the names of several dozen people released already from the Monroe County Jail under the Less is More Act. Along with their names, the sheriff published their original crimes, violent offenses. Now, that sparks some backlash, especially from Democrats who point out they're not back in jail for their original crimes. They had already served their time. Rather, they were back in jail for technical parole violations. But law enforcement leaders argue the bottom line is that these are dangerous people, and now they're free because of the law. Let's talk about it with our guests and better understand it this hour. Let me start by introducing Corey Brown, Monroe County Undersheriff. Thank you for being here, Undersheriff Brown.
Thank you for having me, Evan. We appreciate the opportunity.
And appreciate you making time for us. Also here is Jacqueline Grippy, Monroe County Senior Assistant Public Defender. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Also with us on the line is the Chief of the Gates Police Department, Jim Van Brederode. Chief, thanks for making time.
Hey, it's great to be here, everybody.
And with us as well is Pastor Sebrin Johnson, Senior Vice President of Operations for the Urban League of Rochester. Pastor Johnson, thank you for making time for us as well.
Good to be with you all this morning, Evan.
Good afternoon. It still feels like morning. It's afternoon. And let me start with Jacqueline Grippy, because for people who want to understand the intent here, and they look at this law and they say, explain this to me. Why did we do this? Why do we need to do this? Take us through how this works and maybe some of the rationale behind it as you see it, Jacqueline.
So Less is More is really a remedy to a parole system that has imposed harsh and unnecessary punishment for minor violations of parole conditions. We call these technical violations. And like you pointed out, these are things like missing curfew, testing positive for drugs and alcohol. Prior to the passage of Less is More, New York led the nation, in reincarcerating individuals for these minor parole violations. So in 2019, of the people on parole who New York sent back to prison, over 85% were incarcerated for these technical violations. We're not talking about committing new crimes. We're talking about missing a curfew. We're talking about failing to pay fines and surcharges. That's what we're talking about here. And, you know, New York is really behind the times here. A lot of our criminal justice reform that we're seeing happen now is bringing us up to speed with states like Louisiana and Missouri, who have drastically reformed their parole systems. So there's been a coalition of people across the state who've supported this, and this has included, district attorneys, sheriffs, not necessarily here, but in other places throughout the state, and faith leaders, so that we can see that there is a need, a demonstrated need in our community for this reform.
Okay. Under Sheriff Brown, give me the perspective of the Sheriff's Department on this.
Sure. I think the perspective of the Sheriff's Department is that it's something that came out of Albany, but it's just another blanket statement. So it takes all the individualness away. So now, okay, so there's no technical violations. So this actually happened. A gentleman is serving his sentence, right? Parole is an extension of your sentence. So you haven't served it yet. It's a way you had time to serve. And you're agreeing to do things in order to get to finish serving your sentence in the community instead of in prison, right? Which is a great thing. But you're given certain criteria that you have to do. Gentleman showed up at the parole office. One of the criteria he agreed to was an ankle monitor. Refused it. Said, no, I'm not wearing it. It's a technical violation, so they had to let him leave. So he never even made it to the community, and he refused the ankle monitor clause of his parole, and it's just a technical violation. So he just walked out. So there's a problem there. Or if we're not going to enforce any of these, then we just need to really look at completely revamping the parole system and making it so you go to jail for whatever time is set. And then when you get out, you're not on parole. It's a different transition program, but there's no monitoring, because if you don't show up to your parole officer, it's a technical violation. If you cut off your ankle monitor, it's a technical violation. So things like that. So why have parole then, I guess is my question. Why not just revamp the whole sentencing system and stop having parole and say you're going to get 4 years, you get 4 years or 3 years or whatever that is. And then when you're done, we're really going to work on some intensive transition programs for you to do when you go back to the community.
Let me just explore this a little bit more then with you. So do you view cutting off an ankle monitor differently than, you know, didn't have transportation, showed up for a meeting half an hour late or missed a meeting?
100%. So, okay. I will say this, and, you know, Jacqueline and I had a great conversation before we got on there. There's always room that we can work together, right? And if somebody is late for the bus or misses their bus, yeah, and so they're coming home from work late, they shouldn't be violated for that. I don't think anyone would say that they should be, and there's no...
Different kind of violation.
It's a completely different, right? If you're going to work and you're doing what you're supposed to and you're late, but what we're seeing is repeated violations. You know, we had a big discussion about, I view a curfew violation different when you come home from your bus late. So you work until 10 o'clock and they say you have to be home by 11 and you miss the bus, you stop at McDonald's, whatever, and you get home at 11:30, but you're coming home from work. Much different than the person standing on the corner where there's known to be drugs sold, where maybe they sold drugs and that's why they're in prison, hanging out at midnight. That's a much different curfew violation, right? One is you're out, and I get that, you know, we talked about the fact that these drug areas are in low-income families or areas, and I get that. But you agreed to be in by a certain time. So when you start hanging out late at night out on the street, that's where problems happen, right? And that's where you're starting to go down that road.
All right,
I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. One more point to clear up with you, and then I know all three of our other guests will want to weigh in as well. I think what I'm hearing you raise is a desire for some discretion that says not all violations are the same, but if we throw out all violations, we are missing a chance to carry out the sentence the way it was intended, which is that you've got to follow certain rules if you want to end your incarceration, but your sentence continues with this parole, and if you cut off your ankle monitor, that's not okay. You want the discretion to say that's not okay, but also the discretion to say, hey, you missed that bus, you were working late, you had to grab a burger at McDonald's, you came half an hour late, we're okay with that. That's not the same. It sounds to me like you want that discretion. Is that fair?
100%.
Okay. Is it the case where in the old system before this law that there also wasn't a whole lot of discretion? In other words, if you missed the bus and got home half an hour late and you had that violation, you were going back to jail anyway. What you're arguing on this program today is maybe you shouldn't. Was that happening?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the, you know, there's always a interpretation of the facts, right? And so we tried to get all the violations from parole, and we actually filed a FOIL to see what was their actual violation of the people that were released that we put out, to see what their violation was, because we can't get a direct answer. But what we've seen, at least what I saw when I was on patrol many moons ago, was that it was not the first time you were out. It wasn't coming home late for work. I know they want to say it is that. So I think, once again, that's where we can come together and really look at what are the technical violations? What are they being violated for? Because I absolutely agree. If that was happening before, it shouldn't be.
All right. I take that. So, Jacqueline Grippy, when you hear this desire for discretion, the Sheriff's Department is saying, hey, we're with you. That if somebody is working and trying to get their life back together and they're late catching a bus, we don't want to throw them back in jail. But if they're cutting their ankle monitor off, we do. We think they should. Do they need that discretion? Do you think there's an argument there?
So I will say this. It is when there are sustained violations, it's the first few sustained violations that don't allow the first two for a reincarceration option. On the third violation, you can get up to 7 days. On the fourth violation, you can get up to 15 days. And on the fifth violation, you can get up to 30 days. So there is, remedy for somebody who persistently refuses their electronic monitoring. What we're not seeing is them getting snatched up right away on a technical alone violation. And And that's really significant, too, because we know that when people are brought into custody, whether it be for a few days, a week, a month, and they're held, that's going to interrupt their work. That's going to interrupt their housing. That's going to interrupt them providing for their families. And it's going to be that much harder for them to secure that employment when they get out. How we see discretion play out in New York State is really problematic. We know that Black people are 50% more likely to be incarcerated on a parole technical violation. The Latinx community, it's 30% more likely to be incarcerated for those technical violations. So that's where discretion becomes an issue. And I also, you know, really want to go back to another point about that person who's on the corner. We know that Black and brown people face higher rates of incarceration. People in low-income communities, which are often characterized as drug epicenters, are more likely to be arrested. Those communities are more heavily policed. So when we see someone out on the corner where, you know, it's the police believe it's known to be a drug area, if they are detained and drugs are found on them and there's any indication that they're selling drugs, that's not the kind of behavior that falls under the less is more legislation. That is new criminal conduct. They will face new criminal charges and they will face parole sanctions, including incarceration, as a result of that. What we're talking about is someone who's out on the street in their neighborhood, which happens to be something that the sheriff's department has categorized as low income, being brought in. And then now the parole specialist has this ability to say, well, this is different. You're out. It's a low income neighborhood. This is a known drug area. Now they have this discretion previously had more discretion to put these people in custody as a result of that. So we see discretion play out in a really racial way.
Chief Van Brederode, I know that you have largely agreed with what you've heard from Under Sheriff Brown. Can you respond to some of what you just heard from Jacqueline Grippy in the Monroe County Public Defender's Office?
Yeah, first of all, I want to thank all of us that are on the call. At the end of the day, I think we all got the same goal, you know, and that's to keep our communities safe. And really what's missing on this phone call is we got the wrong people on the phone call. What we need is someone from the Department of Corrections to address the community, which they refuse to do. They won't. You know, the transparency in New York is absolutely terrible. And so we end up in these, you know, these debates back and forth, and nobody gets to know exactly how it works. But I can tell you, just from my experience with the parole system, the people that are sitting on a detainer in a jail right now on a detainer were first of all, that warrant wasn't approved by a supervisor. It had to go all the way up to a district level supervisor to approve that warrant because they took out the discretion, you know. And as you know, back in 2015, especially me, I was very vocal back in 2015 after the Gates Pub shooting, when David Alagood was on parole, got arrested a week before the Gates Pub shooting, and he never got violated. And so it takes a lot to get violated. But that's where we need somebody from the parole system to explain this to everybody, just how much it really took to get violated. It's my understanding it's the person who just refuses to, you know, follow the conditions, and they're just heading down that wrong path, and then they finally get violated. I don't think it's true that people are just being violated on a whim. I know they've really cut down on who gets violated and how many hoops you got to jump through to get somebody violated.
So this is where I think that transparency issue that the chief raises is challenging for, I think, the public evaluation and for journalists. And we'll get Pastor Johnson's take in a moment. I did see Jacqueline Grippy shaking your head a little bit there. I don't want to read too much into your reaction to some of what you heard from the chief, but you don't seem to agree that all of the violations that lead to reincarceration are sort of not just one-offs, but they're sort of persistent violations or stacks of violations that then lead to a reincarceration. You don't seem to agree with that.
Yeah, so I would also thank everyone for being on the show, and I very much welcome a balanced perspective. I would be very interested to hear the perspective from somebody from the Department of Parole. But, you know, we know that New York State absolutely leads the nation in terms of violating people for these technical violations. So it's just factually not true.
Okay.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, go ahead on your trip, and then we'll get Pastor Johnson. Go ahead.
So we're not arguing that we lead the nation, because I know you're reading it, so I wouldn't be foolish. But what we're not saying is, and we can't say that it's not repeated violations. Our perspective is that they are repeated violations, and when we look into it, people have multiple violations. Becklin's perspective is different, and I think the chief hit it right on the head. The only people that can really answer this is parole. They could come out and say, yes, there is repeated violations, or no, there's not. And here's names. So we always say we have this, and they, you know, and I hate to say they, but so we're on different sides of the argument, and we're all trying to keep the community safe. Say, no, it's just one violation, a guy getting home from work. And so, as I mentioned, that's not acceptable to me. But I'm seeing multiple violations. So we really need to get to some actual facts and actual numbers and actual people to see what it really is.
Pastor Johnson, how do you see this issue?
Well, I think that we have to make sure we're not playing a numbers game and reading the data in a fashion that helps our case. The Urban League of Rochester has a number of reentry programs, and so we work with parole and probation to try to get individuals who were recently released or from prison or jail. We try to get them in a position that they can have case management services, job readiness training, academic instruction, and even follow-up services. And we are all, as was said earlier, we are all interested in the general welfare of the public. So the public health is important. However, it's not only the immediate public health, it's also the long-term public health. And when individuals in programs that are on their way to getting job readiness training to become productive citizens of Rochester, if they are violated for certain technical issues, they are exited from the program. And then they are no longer in that line to be in line for a great job or to get the academic instruction. And so it behooves us to see that their introduction to society successfully is part of that public health. And so, therefore, we have to make sure that when we say repeated violations, they really are repeated violations that meet the merits of reincarceration, or else we're not only harming that individual, but we're actually harming the greater public in the long term.
This is where you've got two sides of this, to the extent that this is an argument or a debate. You've got two sides of this conversation viewing what is leading to these reincarcerations differently, and not a whole lot of way to resolve it. Although, Pastor Johnson, you heard Jacqueline Grippy from the Public Defender's Office say that her conclusion is not only listening to individual people's stories and cases, but looking at sort of the racial demographics and drawing conclusions that may be uncomfortable, but lead down a line that says we are overdoing this. And I wonder if you draw the same conclusion, or are you moved at all, Pastor, when you hear the undersheriff, when you hear Chief Van Brederode say, look, we don't want to put these people back in jail, but what do you want us to do if they keep, you know, sort of reviolating?
I have great respect for law enforcement and the job that they have to do. And let's all know there are some individuals who are repeat serious offenders. And I don't think for those who are guilty of major violations or those serial repeaters are the ones we're talking about. We're talking about a plethora of violations that don't rise to that standard. And when you do violate them for curfew, and of course, in our programs, we notice that lack of transportation or reliable transportation is one of the hardest things that we fight every day. And we're giving away the service to them. So we know it's not that they just don't want to be there, but real life happens to those who have been recently released. And so we ought to be in the business of trying to reduce and eliminate those barriers so that individuals at least have a chance to make themselves, make something of themselves later in society. So although I have great respect for law enforcement, and I know that's a tough job, we have to be honest about this. Somehow black and brown bodies tend to be violated at disproportionate rates, and therefore they can't receive those services once they are on parole or probation.
Okay, and I want to hit a couple of other points before we get some feedback from listeners on this. As we're talking about the Less is More Act, it's an ambitious piece of parole reform that was passed in New York State and signed by the governor on September 17th. And it is a piece of legislation that no longer allows for reincarceration for people who are on parole who commit technical violations. And the point that supporters of the law have said is these are not people who are committing new crimes. They're committing parole violations. And when you put them back in jail, then they lose a chance to, just as Pastor Johnson said, keep working, sort of rebuild their lives, rebuild families, et cetera. You've got law enforcement saying we're not just putting them back in jail for technical violations that seem minor to you, that these are repeated violations or they're more serious violations, like cutting off an ankle bracelet. And there's some dissonance there for sure. I think I've got a better understanding of one aspect. I want to ask Chief Van Bredero about something he had said to, I think, Channel 13. You know, you said that these are people that that our communities fear at night. And, you know, we don't want them out in the community. And when I first heard that, Chief, what came to mind for me is if I commit a violent crime and I go to prison for 10 years and I serve the sentence and then I come out on parole, and, you know, I miss a meeting and I go back to jail and I hear a chief saying that guy's a violent criminal and, you know, that's a violent offender and you should be scared of him. I might be thinking, like, hey, man, like, I served 10 years here and I'm trying, you know, I turned my life around. I took classes in prison. I'm trying to get a job. And you're telling the community that I'm still the same person. Like, where's the Christian goal of atonement? Where is rehabilitation? I think what you're saying, though, is, and tell me if I'm wrong, Chief, that you're not saying that about all people. You're saying that about people who deservedly are reincarcerated for persistent violations or more serious violations, and therefore they haven't finished serving their sentence. I think that's what I'm hearing from you today. I don't want to speak for you, but I want to tell you how it first hit me when I heard you say that, and I want to give you space to kind of clarify.
Yeah, look, we're interested in violating the ones that are a pure threat and concerns that we have. And it's kind of interesting because a lot of times when we ask to have someone violated, we can't get them violated. I'm not talking about the ones that are, you know, chewing gum or they're late. We're talking about, and again, it's my understanding from talking to many parole officers, the ones that are sitting right now in the Monroe County Jail are not ones that went out and came home late once. These are the ones who have said, not me, not now, not ever. I'm not going with the program. Do whatever you got to do. I'm going back out there. And so we're trying to save them as much as we're trying to save the community. I'm not talking about the minor ones. And again, because we don't know, because nobody will talk, I rely on what my parole officers are telling me that, Chief, the ones that are sitting in there are the bad ones. They're the bad apples that are they're going to get themselves either killed. And let me give some stats about that. How do we feel about this for a parole system, right? 9 parolees in Rochester have already been murdered this year, and another 6 have been charged with murder. So is that a success or is that a broken parole system? And so what I'm suggesting is it's the bad ones that we're trying to keep off the street, A, to keep them alive, and to keep the community safe. And Tyquan Rivera is the absolute poster child of a broken parole system.
So let me ask Jacqueline Grippy if you want to respond to some of that, too. We're going to get Pastor Johnson back. We lost the call with Pastor, but we'll get Pastor Johnson back. Is there something you want to say in response there?
Yeah, and I don't mean to keep going back to the numbers here, but the numbers don't lie. I mean, these are anecdotal stories. I understand that the sheriff is saying that, you know, his guys are telling him that these are the bad people. First of all, I would say that not everyone who's convicted of a crime is a bad person. We certainly know that. And lots of people are serving state prison bids for nonviolent felonies in the first place. A DWI, an aggravated unlicensed operation, failing to pay 10 or more, you know, having 10 or more suspensions on your license. People serve state prison bids and are on parole for this. So it's not these sensationalized stories in the media are certainly not the typical story. And again, to go back to the numbers, 85% of people who were incarcerated in 2019 were there on technical violations. So these really are the minor offenses. And it may be that the sheriff doesn't believe that, you know, the numbers don't lie. It's 85%.
So part of the problem is we're throwing around that term technical violations, you know, like it's nothing. Okay, so here you are as a parent, right? Your son comes home. You told him to be home at 9 o'clock with the car. Your son comes home at 11 o'clock. He's got alcohol in his breath. Tomorrow night is 12 o'clock. Then he comes home at 1 o'clock. And so as a parent, right, these are technical violations. But we also know as a parent, if I don't correct this, my son is going to end up dead. He's going to be dropping out of school. He's going to get himself arrested. It all starts with I'm going down the wrong path. And I'm not just talking about the minor ones, the AUO. I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about the ones that we are sincerely concerned about, that they're going to go out there and get themselves jammed up.
Well,
we're setting them up for failure. We're setting the prisoner up for failure.
Let me jump in, Chief, because some of what Pastor Johnson has argued is that these violations that lead to reincarceration are derailing lives. They are taking people out of jobs programs. They're setting them up for failure. You are arguing, no, they are not following through with what they need to do. And when we reincarcerate them, it's another pause and a chance to get them back on a better path. Pastor Johnson, does that hold sway with you?
I only wish it did. In fact, I think we probably universally can say that reincarceration, serving jail time, is not really a restorative measure.
Mm.
It's punitive and sometimes deserved, but I don't know that it holds water that if I re-jail you, I am preventing you from having another episode with law. I think the odds are that the more I re-jail you and you spend time in prison populations, it hardens you to life, and it actually may add to recidivism. Mm.
So let me do this. Let me take a phone call from someone who, as far as I understand, based on what I'm reading here, is someone who was, I think, incarcerated and then was reincarcerated for a violation. Greg is on the phone from Brockport. Greg, is that your story? Tell us a little bit about your background.
How you doing? I went to prison for burglary third. It was a nonviolent. I stole from Wegmans, and that was a petty larceny, and I was not allowed to go back in there. However, I was doing drugs, and I went back in there, and I stole 9 cans of baby formula and 7 steaks, and I got 3 to 6 years. Now, I got out, I did, I went, made my parole board, came out, and I went from Brockport to Batavia, and I got a leave in the county. And I was violated. Did a month, just was released in September under the new law, which I'm thankful for. But what I have to say is they should categorize your parole. Now I'm saying, like, if you're a violent offender, you know, it, in my opinion, it should be different between violent and nonviolent. And but the less is more. I lost my job when I went to jail for a month, and that's exactly what I was violated for. Was leaving for 35 minutes from Brockport to Batavia. Did I have permission to go? No, I didn't. I just went. But that's why I went to prison. And I'm thankful the lessons of Morat came here. I'm back out and I'm working again. And, you know, that's my story.
All right. So, Greg, a couple of things here. Why did you go to Batavia? I'm trying to understand.
I went to Batavia Downs. I wanted to go to the casino for a while.
Okay. You wanted to go to casino.
But you knew
you were not allowed to do that.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, let's start there. Under Sheriff Brown here saying, I know I wasn't supposed to go. I wanted to go to the casino.
Yep.
I went.
Yep.
He was reincarcerated. How does that sort of stack up as a violation? And by the way, we're assuming Greg's call is telling the full picture. I appreciate Greg calling. Go ahead, Under Sheriff.
Right. Is there more to it, Greg? Is there more to you're being on parole?
There's nothing more. I told you, I was in veterans court. And I was getting ready to graduate, and I was smoking crack cocaine, okay? And I stole from Wegmans. I wasn't allowed in Wegmans. So I got 3 to 6 years for a burglary third. That is my story. You can look my whole record up. All my stuff is nonviolent and taking things that I shouldn't take. Now, I did the minimum. I made my parole board, and I came out, and I was on parole for almost a year, about 8-9 months. And then I went to Batavia without permission, and I got violated for leaving the county.
And that was your only violation? That was the first violation?
That's my first violation. And I pled to 4 months. They offered me 4 months or to do a program, but I wasn't using at the time. I haven't used since I've been out. Now, I said, I'll take the 4 months. I was getting ready to go upstate. When she signed the law, they came and knocked on the door. I was in Plaza North. And they knocked on my door and says, you've been restored to parole. And that was it.
Okay. Greg, about what put you in jail to begin with here, you said you stole from Wegmans because you were doing drugs. You mentioned you're a veteran. You served. When did you serve?
1984 to 88.
Okay. And then it sounds to me like you developed a drug habit and you were stealing. Were you stealing to feed your habit?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'd go through my money and I stole.
Okay. What's your goal now? Now that you're out.
I work every day and I'm doing my parole. I'm done going back and forth to jail. It's not me anymore, but I'm doing what I got to do. I'm not going anywhere. If I want to go somewhere, I'll ask permission. And that's the story.
Yeah, I got you. But I mean, like, I know there's some listeners thinking, why did you go to the racetrack?
Because I enjoyed a gamble once in a while, and I just wanted to go. I mean, that's just it. You know, I'm not the kind of, to me, it's sickening when you got to call if you want to go to a casino. Excuse me, may I go, please? Especially when you're a nonviolent crime. If you're violent and you hurt people, it should be a different story.
All right, Greg, hang there for a sec. Let's let everybody respond to this because, again, Undersheriff, do you feel like you got the story here, or do you feel like there's gaps missing? I mean, do you feel like you can comment on this?
I don't know if there's anything missing or what's going on with it. I don't think you never didn't show up for your parole officer or anything like that, and you told him you went to Batavia?
No, I didn't tell him I went to Batavia.
How'd they find out?
I never, it's because they came into a house check and I wasn't here. I was already in Batavia.
So you were on a curfew?
No, I was, from 8 to 8. Yes, I was. From 8 at night to 8 in the morning.
So you went out at night?
And I was good. No, I went out at 7 in the morning, first thing. And she stopped by here, and my ma said that I wasn't here, and I went to Batavia, and I went without permission. Was I wrong? Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess what I would say is, I'm sure there's probably more as far as everything going on, but I don't know. So if you just take this one thing, I would hate to see someone lose their job over that, but you also want people to comply with parole, right? You want them to comply with their conditions. So I think he just said, I just went because I didn't want to do it.
Hold on, Greg. I mean, I'll let you respond in a second, but let's let people on the panel respond, Greg, and then we'll get back to go ahead, Undersheriff.
So he left the county, he violated curfew, right? This one time.
Yeah.
And the one time that he did it, he got caught. That leads you to, right? In all honesty, like everybody, right? When you catch your kids, it's not the first time that they did it. You caught them. It's multiple times that they did it.
Okay.
Right,
Greg? So hold on. Let's explore this. So, Greg, did you also violate conditions on other times in which you were not caught?
Oh, I traveled outside the county. I'm going to say yes, absolutely. But there's a big difference if somebody's doing something like that and committing another crime. There's a big difference. You know, not every single soul that's on parole is committing crimes. I just got done work today. I just got done work and got home and got this message. You know, I'm working every day, but I can't sit there and be honest with you and say, listen, it'll never happen again. Okay. I can't say that I won't go to the casino without permission. I can't say that, you know, but the one thing I know that I'm not doing is just because someone's on parole doesn't mean they're committing other crimes when they're violated.
Okay. Now, Undersheriff, so he's saying you're right. He's violated before, but he thinks this is such a minor thing here. I'm not doing anything to hurt anybody.
So I guess it takes me back to the whole parole condition, right? So as part of your parole condition, he's probably not allowed to gamble. He's probably not allowed to leave the county. He's probably got to stay home from certain times, I think by his own admission. He's not doing that. So if we're not agreeing to the commission, why don't we just do a set time in prison? You do your time, and then you're out, and you're free, right? I mean, two options. So
Hold on a second, Undersheriff. You did say earlier this hour that there are some violations that you think should not reincarcerate someone. This does not sound like you think one of them. You think that he's...
So he's a repeated offender who keeps not following his conditions, according to what he just said, right? So why have parole if you're not going to...
Okay.
If the conditions mean nothing, then don't have the condition. Now, if he was leaving the county to go to work, if he did it one time... But I think by Greg's own admission, he's going to do it again, and he did it before, and I just got caught because he doesn't agree with it. He should be able to gamble.
Okay. Jacqueline Grippy from the public defender's office. What do you make of the story?
Well, Greg, first of all, thank you so much for your call and thank you for your service. I appreciate
that. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Greg's story is a very typical story, a nonviolent felony. We call these trespass burgs, right? So he perhaps stolen from Wegmans before. And again, I don't know Greg. I don't know his story prior to what I just heard. He'd probably stolen from Wegmans before, had been given a notice, you know, don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went back and he stole these items to feed a drug habit, right? Does that sound right, Greg?
Yes, it is.
How many times, Greg, were you arrested for larceny at all places?
Oh, my goodness gracious. I'll say probably once, 5 times.
Just 5 times?
Well, no, I've got longer record than that, but I'm talking for petty larceny about 5 times, yes.
But what I'll say to that question is, you know, that you posed to Greg here, is that that did not go into why he was violated on parole. He did a state prison bid for after failing out of veterans court. He got 3 to 6. He did a period of incarceration, and then he came out. And as a result, and it probably was multiple violations, I would imagine that his parole violation sheet read he left the county without without permission to do so. He was not there.
Curfew,
right? And so one course of conduct can result in multiple violations.
Sure.
So we'll see that happen. And then he got 4 months as a result. And I think what Les is more saying is that as a society, you know, we're not punishing Greg for his past 5 prior petty larcenies, whether he was convicted or not, I don't know. What we're doing is we're incarcerating him for breaking these technical violations. And as a society, we don't want to do that. That's what Les is more saying. We don't want our tax dollars going to putting Greg in jail. We don't want to remove Greg from his place of employment, the security that he's built, which is extremely hard to do when you're getting out of prison, when you're getting a record. Or when you have a record, you're getting out of a period of incarceration, and you're trying to find a job, you're trying to have stable housing, you're trying to reconnect with family members. We're going to tear that down, put you in jail for 4 months, really for going out of town to the casino.
I think.
So what's the alternative, Greg?
That's
Chief Van Brederode. Let's let Chief Van Brederode from Gates jump in. Go ahead, Chief.
Well, then what's the alternative, guys? What are we supposed to do? Like, look at gambling can be the bad
chief. Hold up, Greg. You got to let him go.
I would like to answer that question.
I promise you you'll have time, Greg, but go ahead, Chief.
Okay.
Like gambling is a problem. Right? You know, it's an addiction, kind of like a substance abuse problem, you know? And so what would you like to have seen the state of New York done to you?
Can I answer now?
Yeah, go ahead, Greg.
All right, Chief. You know, thanks for your opinion, Chief. The one question that the answer I'm going to give to that is there should be no split bids. There should be no split bid for nonviolent. There should be no split bid for violent. There should be one bid. If you want to give somebody 3 years for committing a crime, you do your 3 years. Okay? And none of the nonsense. In my opinion, if they want to get rid of all the nonsense, get rid of parole. Okay? Do your time, come home, and go back to work. If someone's going to hire you based on what you've done, all my stuff's been nonviolent. I've never had a violent crime in my life. Okay, and you can run my record. My name is Greg Ward. You can run it. Now, if you sit there and you take away the parole, which they'll never do, okay, but there should never be no split bid. If you kill somebody, it should be life, okay? If you do a nonviolent crime and they want to give you this 3 to 6 or 2 to 4, give them a flat bid. Do your time and come home and not worry about the nonsense. The jails would never be so full. Never would they be this full because they'd be out and people would be sick and tired of doing the nonsense. I mean, I'm not out committing new crimes. Don't get me wrong. I've committed crimes, okay? But right now, I'm as clean as they come. I'm sober. I haven't done any drugs, and I'm not doing a damn thing wrong.
So okay? I'd like to just jump in real quick, Greg, just to say, one, congratulations on getting sober and staying sober when you get back out, because we know, and you know, Chief Embretter does a ton of work with opioid addiction and addiction, and that's a feat in itself.
Thank you.
And number two, agree with you, right? Don't do the split bid, which I didn't realize what that was called until you just explained it, but... You know, let someone say, no, I'm going to do my 3 years, and then when I'm done, I don't want to have conditions. I don't want to ask permission to go
anywhere.
That's
right.
Right? And so Chief and I are on board with you that, yes, if we're not going to – if the conditions mean nothing, why have them?
But to be clear, Under Sheriff Brown, that would mean that in – let's just take a 3-year sentence. he'd be doing all 3 years incarcerated and then out, no parole, as opposed to maybe 2 years or 18 months incarcerated and then parole.
So I would say that it would be determined at sentencing by the judge, the defense attorney, and the district
and
attorney's
that's it,
office.
No parole.
This is your sentence. And then no parole, you do your year and a half, 2 years, 3 years, whatever that agreement is, and he gets out, there's no parole, and he can go wherever he wants.
I got to get the pastor in just a second, but Jacqueline, does that sound okay to the public defender's office?
Oh, I certainly can't speak for the entire public defender's
office. How about you?
I mean, yeah, I think that people should have the option in certain instances to do a straight period of incarceration if that's their choice, if that's what's in their best interest, and you know, and then not have that parole follow-up if that's not something that they want. But, you know, this less is more is not taking away the parole board's ability to reincarcerate people. What it's doing is saying, we're not going to do it for these technical violations. We're not going to reincarcerate people when they have a dirty urine screen.
But what would you do with Greg? What would you do with Greg, who is, let's say, you know, the system is working the way you want it to, which includes, which I have no idea what I'm hearing. I'm hearing a lot of weird stuff. Okay. The system is working the way you want it, Jacqueline. You know, Greg is saying to you, I'm going to the casino sometimes. Sometimes I'm going on outside curfew. I know technically I'm not supposed to. I'm going to do it. I don't think I'm hurting anybody. I'm definitely not going to commit crimes, but I am going to violate that portion of it. What you're arguing is that is not worth blowing up his life and putting him back in jail. And that's part of what this is about. What should happen then?
Well, I think that you should, in terms of the terms and conditions of parole, well, first of all, if I were Greg's lawyer, I would certainly not advise any of my clients to.
No, I've got people emailing saying, like, you know, we don't know this guy's story is true. He's being very forthcoming. I don't think there's
incredibly
any doubt about
candid.
He is being very candid, and we should appreciate that. But what I'm asking you is, if you don't want to reincarcerate him, and I understand why you don't, I understand why the law was created, should there be any sort of step taken with Greg? If you don't want him going to the casino, or if the law is saying you can't go at 7 a.m. or 4 a.m. or whenever.
Well, there is. I mean, less is more does allow for, you know, when there's repeated violations, right? So that is something that is allowable under this legislation.
So you think he should be violated? Oh, you think he should be violated?
That's not what I said. I said that's what the law is. I think my opinion in terms of whether or not people should be incarcerated for these minor violations, no. I don't think that he should be incarcerated for going out of the county, for not harming someone, for any of that. That's my own opinion. When there's been no meaningful violation of probation, he didn't hurt anybody. He didn't commit a new crime. He's on a good path. He's working. He's sober. He's doing all of these things. Take it in the totality. Do I think if it were up to me to violate Greg? No, I wouldn't violate.
Okay. Pastor Johnson, when you hear this story, what comes to mind for you? What do you think?
Well, I think, again, it's hard to talk in absolutes. It's a dangerous scenario to say you committed a crime. Everyone that's found guilty of a crime, do your whole sentence and call that a day. That has some serious implications for black and brown people who may not be convicted, given the same amount of years in the very beginning, and now they're just relegated to serving full time. So there's some real problems there if we just say everyone do their time of which they were found guilty, regardless of circumstance. So that's one thing. I do say that every time we should ask the question, though, what is the greater good for the public? Does it really serve a person if we violate them on this technicality? Does it serve the public and that by extension, that person in the best possible way? And maybe the answer to that, and I'm not trying to solve it over the little time that we have together, but maybe the answer to that is we may not be able to look at such a binary choice. Do your sentence, you're guilty of nothing. Maybe there's some in-between steps that maybe there, and I think the Less is More Act kind of says we can do that, but cap the time they would be rejailed for. But I think there's some room there that we can have discussion over, but we certainly don't have to violate a person and send them to jail to fulfill a sentence that may not be in the best interest of the person or society.
All right, Greg, but I got to let you go, but I just want to just ask, what are you going to do next here?
I'm just going to work every single day, and I'm going to do the best I can, and that's it. Do I agree with the less is more? I do for nonviolent offenders. Okay, I believe that if you're a nonviolent crime, Okay, and I'm not saying be violent and plead down to nonviolent. If you're a nonviolent person, I think the less is more is great for a nonviolent. Now, if you're a violent person and your traits continue to be violent, I think that you should definitely it shouldn't. Here's what I'm going to say. I don't think the less is more should be for violent people. That's my opinion.
Okay.
I think the less is more should be for nonviolent, and that's just what I believe in.
Yeah, Greg, thank you. I mean, to be clear here, less is more does not say that if you committed a violent offense and you continue to be a violent person, that you should not be incarcerated. I mean, no one is saying that. But less is more does apply to people who are simply on parole, no matter the original reason. Let me get Patty from Canisius on the phone next. Hi, Patty, go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
I can. Go ahead.
Hi. So my story, in my opinion, is a little different. So I had gotten felony DWI back in 2008. And so I was offered an alternative to incarceration program. So I did do 4 days in jail, and I did 8 work release weekends. And then I did the drug treatment court out in Livingston County. I had to do probation. I had to do outpatient rehab, and probably some other things that I'm forgetting. But I just feel the opposite way as the other caller. I think that if people don't adhere to the conditions and the rules of their probation or their parole, they're really shortchanging their own lifestyle and their own recovery and that whole process. And, you know, I signed that contract. So if I didn't want to do it, then I shouldn't be signing the contract. And I could have gone and done 1 1/3 to 4. I didn't want to do 1 1/3 to 4, so I signed the contract to do the other thing. And I'm not completely familiar with parole, but if you're willing to be paroled, then you're willing and you're agreeing to follow those rules and conditions. And if you don't want to do that, I'm sure you could just stay in jail and do your sentence. So that's my take on it. I feel a lot differently about it. And mine were nonviolent, but I was still, I was a threat to society. I was driving, you know, I got caught driving drunk, and that was the punishment. And it's not up to me to say what the punishment should be. Those are the laws, and I didn't obey the laws, so I had the consequence.
Okay, hang there for a second, Patty. Did you have a question, Jacqueline?
Yeah, Patty, can I ask, did you actually do a term of parole, or did you do some type of alternate program that where you didn't have to actually be on parole?
I did probation. So I did probation for 4 years, but the structure sounds very similar to the parole. I mean, I had to call, and I did. If I wanted to go to an AA meeting in Canandaigua, which is technically Ontario County, I would call, and I'd say, I'd like to go to this meeting. Can I?
Okay. Did that sound similar to a setup, probation, parole, Jacqueline?
Probation and parole are both ways of monitoring individuals who've been convicted of crimes, but there's very different processes.
Okay. So Patty is saying that structure helped her, and it was necessary for her to get better. That was her own perspective. So as we get ready to wrap here, I appreciate Patty, Greg sharing their thoughts, different views on whether it has worked for them and what fair actually means. As we go forward here, I heard you, Undersheriff, say you still feel like there's a dialogue that can happen. I mean, the law is passed. Is the sheriff's office going to keep pressing for change here? I mean, are you working towards any sort of a compromise? Have you been moved at all by some of the arguments for this law?
So I think, you know, it was great hearing the pastor and all the different perspectives. And I think we always want to keep an open mind. But just like the pastor said, right, when we work in absolutes, that's when we have problems. And he brought up some great absolute problems. So whenever we say this is always the way it's going to be. Now, of course, the law is passed, but I think like everything, it's like when you problem solve, right? One of the things you do at the end, if you do the Sarah problem solving method, is analyze what happened and then make adjustments to keep your process moving forward, right? So I think that's always what needs to happen. So when we pass these laws, we should be analyzing what's happening and then readjusting and working within them to make our community safer and make those people that are going through the system better. I completely agree with the pastor that we want to do whatever we can to help people never come back. And that's always our goal, is how do we set them up to never come back? So maybe more transportation, things like that. So I think there's lots of options. But what we want to do is always evaluate. Never be afraid to look at what's going on and then change it.
30 seconds. Go ahead, Jacqueline. What do you think?
I think that less is more is very needed legislation that's helping transform a draconian criminal justice system. I mean, New York is just has been behind the times in terms of criminal justice reform. And I think that it hurts society when we continue to incarcerate people on these technical violations. If there's one takeaway that I could have the listeners on your station, you know, really take away from this conversation, which has been great, by the way, thank you for having me. It's that people who are charged with new crimes are not benefiting from less is more. These are technical violations. It disrupts people's housing. It's expensive for taxpayers, $680 million a year, incarcerating people for technical violations.
All right, I got to let Chief Van Bredero keep it tight. Chief, go ahead.
Real quick, these reforms coming out of Albany are really not reforms. They're not really providing us with any resources.
A similar refrain the Chief has made in the past. Just real briefly, Pastor Johnson, some final thoughts, about 20 seconds.
Just to say that this probably is not the best way to spend taxpayer money by reviolating. It doesn't help the greater good of the community, nor does it help the individual in the long term, and that should be our goal.
Pastor Sebrin Johnson is Senior Vice President of Operations for the Urban League of Rochester. Sebrin, thank you for making time for the program today.
Thank you.
Chief Van Bredero from the Gates Police Department. Always appreciate the time, Chief.
Thanks, Devin.
The Undersheriff of Monroe County is Corey Brown. Thank you for making time.
Thank you for having us.
And Jacqueline Grippy, Monroe County Senior Assistant Public Defender. Nice having you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
More connections coming up in a moment.